podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Rap. It's Neil Atkinson. And with me, I've got SM's Al Feller, Ian Salmon. I've got Gareth Roberts and I've got Paul Cope in order to go through. Well, what matters arising from a Liverpool Football Club perspective? Yes, it is an international break, but lots of things don't stop. What goes on behind the scenes doesn't stop. We're going to talk about the remaining contracts that need to get sorted out, and then we're going to move into the Newcastle takeover, where it impacts the league and where it impacts Liverpool. That is all to come, but we will start with those contracts. Now, I've sent everyone present a little screenshot of everything that is outstanding across the next couple of years for Liverpool. We know the big ones are the 2023 ones. There's five outstanding there, which is Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita, and then the big three, the front three, as always has been Salah, Firmino and Mane. We'll come on to that. The 2022 list, Gareth, it seems pretty straightforward. Adrian and Karius, you presume, are both going to leave the club, although I think we thought that about Adrian this time round as well. Within there as well, there's a couple of little things that I think may occur. Liverpool have said it will be Milner's last season, but there's Courtois today talking about the impact of international football in 2022. There's the fact that I think whenever he's played this year, I actually think Milner's been pretty good. Not seen any diminishing in his performance at all. I do wonder if it's possible there might be a mini rethink around Milner, given the way 2022 looks around international fixtures in June, September, and a World Cup in November and December.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. I mean, I think Milner's one of them that you do want to kind of hang on to in some capacity. I'd like to see him sort of be on the coach and stuff without knowing what the dynamics are behind the scenes. But I've heard enough stories of him mentoring, you know, young players coming through. He's obviously got the respect of the dressing room, the respect of the manager. And I just think, you know, if he wanted to go in that direction, we should be facilitating that rather than him end up doing that on someone else's books. But equally, this thing persists about Leeds United, albeit that as things stand, there's a good chance they go down. And does he really want to play in the Championship? Because that is a mad place to play football. I mean, look, you know, even last season, look, he's making 36 appearances there, isn't he? 37 the season before. He is the break glass option. He is always available. He can play in so many positions as well, and most times doesn't let you down. It's whether he wants to be that, I would say,
yeah.
Ultimately. I think Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp in particular wouldn't mind that being the case. It's whether he just thinks to go somewhere else, like a Leeds, and just go and get a season in where I'm playing more regularly. A bit in the fashion that sort of Lallana has at least attempted to do with Brighton. So I would say that's the question mark. I think if he shows willing to stick around, maybe talks about coaching, you know, maybe there's something to be done there with Milner.
I like a U-turn. do you know what I mean? Like one that works like this, where everyone just sort of gets to February, everyone begins to it. Because I think that we presume that the football people are able to constantly think years ahead, and I think that on the big stuff they are, but on maybe some smaller stuff it may genuinely may well be that they might just all look at each other in February and go, Christ, this year's a bit mad. We could do a lot worse than having someone who we know everything we need to know about for a bit longer, and as Gareth says, someone who might have a bit of personal development to do on his coaching side.
Yeah, 100%, and I think Milner's played the blinder over the past few years, to be honest, and I think if you could have a chat with Gini Wijnaldum now, he might say, I wish I'd done what Milner did. Yep. I can imagine Milner sat him down at one point and said, look, mate, just do what I did. If you want to stay here, just tell him you'll take a two-year deal. And at the end of every 2 years, say to them, just give me one. And I'll prove to you every year I still deserve my contract on my wages. And it's worked out really nice for him. On the U-turn thing, I do think the funny thing about the Milner thing is the script, like the pre-written script, that he will go to Leeds. That's the thing. Yep. Like, it's either he stays or goes to Leeds. And I think that was great up until they got Bielsa, and he made them run more than any other bastards on the planet. Do you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, at this stage of your career, do you want to go somewhere where you run more than you do now? That's his biggest problem, is his legs are going to go. And I can see this talk amongst him, like even pundits on TV after the City game, the likes of Neville were talking about that moment in your career when all of a sudden someone runs past you,
yep,
and there's nothing you can do about it. And just in your head, you go, I'm done. And I just get that feeling.
He's had
Milner.
That and come back from it, though. He had that when Zaha skinned them.
Yeah.
And then he's come back, played Zaha again and been embossed them.
But there's something about Milner, isn't it? Which is that thing. But sooner or later, it's a bit like we've joked about Mane in the past, that, like, do you know, the Mane line a couple of years ago of tiredness is just in your head. And you're like, no, mate.
No, it's actual tiredness. It exists.
It actually does exist. Like, I'm with you, like, up to a point. But there will come a point when James Milner just can't do it anymore. But I do think he's happy and the club's happy, like you say, to consider it. And that's the main thing.
The other one that's out of contract in 2022, Ian, it's interesting, it's Divock Origi. Now, this is Anfield and they don't get this stuff wrong. Actually, they had his contract till 2023. So he's out of contract in 2022, but they had his contract till 2023. And one of the things that occurs to me is it might well be, and there was some talk of it at the time, and we've seen it in other players, where there's an option to give him an extra year. I don't think Liverpool would want Origi to walk away for nothing, and they've been using him a little bit recently. There'll be a lot of people who would be absolutely staggered if Origi got another year out of Liverpool, but I wouldn't be absolutely staggered, because then the manager does think he is useful.
I think the manager thinks he's useful. I think also there is that if you can trigger a clause that keeps him there for another year without actually putting out a lot of money, then you're basically looking at it as in terms of you protect the value of it. So you've got a value to the player that you may not have had otherwise. And, you know, he's looked sharper when he's come on recently. So, you know, he does look like he can still be a little bit of an option. When I looked at the screenshots that were going in front of us, the idea that he was worth 10.8 million at the moment astonished me. Because, his contract's up in June. There's no value. There's no value to a lad whose contract goes up in June. But if you can get another year, then maybe there is a few million you could get back if need be.
For me, Paul, on this one, it is about sort of protecting that saleable value. Liverpool, I think, have been quite aggressive in the idea that Divock's got significant saleable value, and they don't seem to compromise on this stuff very often. I think they think it will become, if it's our way or the highway, eventually it will become our way. I am intrigued. I'm intrigued to see what happens with Origi, because I think if Liverpool do have an option to give him an extra year and take it, as I say, I think there'll be a certain number of supporters who won't believe that that's happened. Mm. But I think Liverpool will do it from a position that they feel as though this is a player that they can get a fee for at some point. And in the meantime, the manager's happy to use him.
Yeah, the whole idea of getting any fee for anybody, we've seen this over the years. I mean, just looking at this list, it gave me a flashback. I remember when I went down to do Sky Sports News for you years ago now. It was the first time I'd ever done it. I was nervous and all that. And I just said, without thinking about it, they asked me about, for some reason, asked me about the goalkeeper situation. And it was Mignolet and Karius at the time. And without thinking about it, and I was nervous, I just basically said, yeah, I mean, we'd sell them, but who'd want them? And I had mates messaging me afterwards going, Jesus, that was harsh. Like, that was cutting. Like, who'd want these guys? But years later, we've literally got this. Karius is one of those lads now, isn't he? Who, do you know, I remember Carragher saying, might have been in an interview with you, where he said sometimes you'd come back to pre-season training and lads would turn up and you'd be like, oh my God, you still play for us? That's mad. And he is the perfect example of, like, what do we want for Karius? And still no one will take him off our hands. Where they're going, do you want, he's a good keeper, I promise you, he's a good keeper, we've got a highlight reel. And people are like, nah, it's all right, thanks, mate. And we're like, you can have him. You can have him for not, we'll drive him to you. No. And so the idea that, like, as Ian says, we can get 10 million for Divock, or no matter what we do, is almost fanciful. But at the same time, I can see why they would say we can. Because the Klopp's talk the other week of, look at him.
Yeah.
Like, basically, no one else knows anything about footy. Like, how can you, he must look at all the clubs who struggle for a goal scorer and think, how is it that you didn't phone us in the summer to get a lad who scored in a Champions League final?
Yeah.
Literally. Like, it's not that long ago he was keeping Lukaku. Well, maybe it is that long ago. Maybe I'm showing my age. He was keeping Lukaku out of the Belgian team. And people forget all of this. But at the end of the day, you can't force people to remember. So if we're going to keep him, it's almost, if you want to do that, you've got to play him more. We said this the other week when Klopp was like,
but he has started since mid-September. He has played more.
That's true. But, like, does he play enough that we can reverse the psychological idea that he's not that good?
But the other thing we've got on that is nobody knows what players are worth anymore.
Exactly.
You've got this situation where Leeds can spend 40 million on a winger. Everton can spend 1.7. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know what players cost. I genuinely don't know how much a footballer is.
Yeah.
So maybe Divock should be going for 30 again now. We don't know. Another year, maybe we get decent money for him. Or maybe he's not worth anything. And the other thing that surprised me, and that was, and I don't mean that in a bad way, he's not worth anything, but financially maybe there is no value to him for us in the current market. Karius is 28. He still feels like he's a 23-year-old lad. He feels like a player who's somehow managed to waste a great deal of his playing career because he's not played much for, what, 4 years now? And, it, you know, there have been external circumstances that, and the wages issues he had when he went out on loan. But surely you would want to play football somewhere.
I was just looking at Divock Salary there. Apparently, according to the internet, you know, with the usual pinch of salt, he's on £60,000 a week, so £3 million quid a year. But what just made me go wow is that estimated career earnings so far £17 million quid. It's all right, isn't it?
It is very all right.
Divock's always felt comfortable to me that he's like doing all right in his career as well. We keep saying, don't we, like, well, that, you know, why doesn't he want to move on and all this kind of stuff? I think we know from what we've read about him over the years and stuff he's done, he's obviously got other interests. He's really interested in psychology. They had to get his head out of the books at one point and say, can you have a game of footy? And he might just sort of be, you know, everyone goes on about him being laid back. I think he's just relatively comfortable about how it's all going. And he's a really interesting one. I mean, you just said about Karius being 28. He's only 26. And it feels like he's been around forever, doesn't it?
But the mad thing about you saying he's probably relatively sanguine about how it's going is, you know, if you just said in 2018, there's no way he's going to play much of a part. And then he effectively has an unbelievable 6 months of football, but he still doesn't actually play that much football. But he's on the pitch for some of the biggest moments of any of our lives. So I think if you are Divock, it's difficult to say, well, you know, you might play more regularly if you go to Wolves. And he's like, yeah, but I won't have the best days of people's lives if I go to Wolves, whereas I've got a lived experience that can happen here.
Exactly, yeah. I might get brought on for the European Cup campaign and play a really huge part and everyone might talk about me forever.
Again.
I quite fancy that. Yeah. No, there is that, because, I mean, it kind of feels that once you leave Liverpool, certainly for Divock, you know, the only way is down, isn't it? So that's probably in his mind as well. He's on decent money there. He got a new contract after what he did in Madrid. And look, you know, I don't begrudge him at all. I see some people that get really frustrated, and look, I get it. But equally, I just think, you know, he earned that. And you know, was he given that out of emotion, or was he given that out of that he's, you know, proved himself to be a really good moments player at times? The latter, I would say.
I think it just to add to that, it's something that still baffles me about just generally, and you know what I'm like about this, and I'm always conscious I might get boring about it, but how we all fall into this. We look at football as like what they do for a living is completely different to what everybody else does, but it's not. It's a job. So like where Divock is in his life, like everyone always goes, the main thing for a footballer should be playing games of football every week. And I reckon if you asked most footballers, they'd be like, no, that's not the main thing at all, to be honest, mate. Like, I play football every day. You just don't watch it. So my job is playing footy every day. And the company I play for is one of the best in the world. The lads I hang around with and all the people in the, you know, everyone I know in the gym and the canteen and all that, I love them. It's a boss place to work. I get paid £60,000 every week, by the way.
Like, get fed.
Yeah, that's it. I get me dinner on top of that. I get expenses, like the expense account of other places.
Don't mind me old trainees.
Exactly. I can still read me psychology books. It's sound, you know. Yeah. And on top of that, every now and then I get to play in a Champions League final and become an absolute hero and then score a goal in a Champions League final. Do you know what? I'll sit it out, lads. If you offer me another 5-year contract, I am good. Imagine someone offering any of us or anyone we know or anyone listening to this that job. You can have that job forever. You'd be like, oh my God. You'd be bouncing into your mates in the pub going, I have just got the best job in the world. And yet we look at people like Divock Origi and go, I think he should probably move on for his own sake. He's like, I'm all right, lads. Yeah, for his own sake.
There's an interesting angle in that, because Divock, being a psychology student and, you know, obviously thinking slightly outside the box on things, he might view his job as making sure that Virgil van Dijk's the best centre-back in the world, because he's doing it 5 days a week. He is the target that is actually playing on Virgil to make him better at his job.
On van Dijk, in this spate of contract renewals there's been, Gareth, van Dijk's ended up with the biggest contract in Liverpool history. He's the highest paid player we've ever had, and it's a 5-year deal. So there'll be no one who's ever had a contract like Virgil van Dijk has got from a Liverpool point of view. But someone's about to have a bigger contract than Virgil van Dijk if he's going to stay, and that is Mo Salah. We're focused all in on Salah, but neither Firmino nor Mane have got an agreement yet. So we'll start with the big three in that 2023 list. Do you think all this is interrelated? You know, Liverpool have got this big wage bill, but they've got a wage structure which to date hasn't singled a big player out markedly more than others. I mentioned van Dijk there. It's an enormous contract, but so is Alexander-Arnold's. You know, so is Alisson's, so is Fabinho's. Mm-hmm. Van Dijk's may well be the biggest, Henderson's as well. But do you think this is all interrelated from a Liverpool point of view with the contracts done, but also with Salah and then Firmino and Mane in terms of how they're trying to juggle all these balls at once and bring it to fruition.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously Salas is the one we all want done, and we all want done yesterday. The other two, there seems to be less clamour for, because both have had a sort of drop off performance wise. We're sort of not sure. It feels like you can sort of maybe gamble with them, as harsh as that is to say, well, let's see how you get on and then we'll talk about it. Whereas with Mo, it feels as though, you know, he's so outstanding and his levels are so high that if we don't get it done, A, we don't secure his value, and B, we don't secure him, and he goes elsewhere. So I think that's why we think of it in that manner. And look, Firmino and Mane's figures say it in themselves that there has been a drop-off of sorts, although I think it's slightly harsh on Mane in that his figures are actually better than most people seem to give him credit for, I think. Whereas Firmino, it's more marked. But I mean, look, maybe as well, because, you know, look, if you get Salah, maybe they're looking at it saying, if we do Salah and he does sort of break the wage structure, which most people expect, then when it comes to doing the other two, maybe they then ask for more, not parity, but more than they'd want right now. So maybe they're trying to get them done before they do Mo Salah. Who knows? Like, there's loads of sort of stuff you can apply to it and say, well, I think it could have been that and that will make sense, but we don't actually know. We don't know what the negotiations look like, what's being said, if anyone is being a pain in the arse, if agents are hard to deal with. We just sort of presume a lot of stuff, don't we, and sort of fill the void. But we all want Mo Salah done. I want Mo Salah done. I just think, you know, the talk about his age and all this kind of stuff, I don't think it sort of acknowledges for me that, you know, things have changed, that you know, that there are people, there are players in the 30s performing to a top level week in, week out, because they are looking after themselves in an unbelievable manner, like totally different to anything else we've probably seen before from footballers. They've got science at the fingertips, they've got all kinds of experts, they're looking into things themselves. I was reading something about Lewandowski the other week, and this mad thing he does where he eats his meals the wrong way round, or something, he has the dessert first or something, and all this kind of stuff, and I was like, well, that sounds wild, but there's obviously a reason.
Yeah.
But you know, there's another fella to add to the list of elite players who were still performing at an age where once upon a time we were saying they were shot. So I sort of don't buy the shot talk around Mo Salah.
The other reason why I'm not, there's a really good email that I think's worth subscribing to from Grace Robertson, but she argues that Liverpool would end up with a bit of a sunk cost on Salah. I'm not sure, but part of why I'm not sure, Gareth, to come back to you on it, is he actually doesn't play that many games of football before he's about 23. He's playing in an Egyptian league, then he moves to Bale. He has the lost year at Chelsea. He doesn't play quite as much in Italy as we all think.
It's not the Michael Owen situation, far from, basically.
I think he's sort of he's ramping up his output rather than it going the other way, and I think that's quite interesting. That gets missed. It's not like it was for Rooney, or even, you know, to an extent, like there's Tielemans at the minute, who's cited as an example at Leicester, where he's basically played since he was 16 top level football year in, year out, so he's already on an unbelievable number of appearances and he's only 24. I think it's a bit of a flip side of that, and that's another reason why the idea is legs just disappear from beneath him. I'm just not convinced it will happen in an immediate marked way in 2 years.
No, neither am I. And I also think as well, the idea that you give him a long deal, and then that means that, you know, if he's looking, you know, if his numbers drop all of a sudden towards the end of it, you can't get rid as well. That doesn't seem to be factored into some of the conversations I've read and heard. It's like, well, if you're going to be stuck with Mo Salah, like, A, there's no way of knowing what the drop-off is. I mean, you know, a game, they will know at the club more about what's happening inside his body than we do. You know, everything's monitored to the nth degree, and I imagine it shows you what you want to hear from Mo Salah's body, you know, from what we can see, what his performances are and everything else. But equally, as I say, if you give him 5 years, for instance, and when he's 33, 34 or whatever, there is a marked drop-off, A, you don't have to play him as much, but B, he might be fine, and C, if he's crap, you can sell him, and D, succession planning as well. Like, you know, we're like, at some point we presumably sign a young forward that starts to bed in,
or that's get
play some of his games, or that's Gordon. Yeah, and so, you know, you're suddenly not saying to him, oh, we expect you to play every single game that Liverpool ever play, which is currently the case.
One more to come back to Gareth, and then we'll bring other people in. Just again, you've gone A, B, C, D there. I've got an E on this as well, which is that I think that in everyone's head this thing's a graph, and there's some sort of point where there's a peak, and then it just begins to go down, and it goes inexorably down in a straight line. We know that's not true. like, for instance, we've got lived experience. Gerrard 13-14 is, in the second half of 13-14, Gerrard is far better than he was for the 2 years that preceded. Yeah. And then he goes off a cliff, by the way, and then he gets a bit of performance back. Kenny, 85-86, he doesn't do outrageous numbers in the second half of that season. But there's all these quotes from Howard Kendall at the time saying the difference in this title race has been Kenny Dalglish and his performance. And he just pulls that out from nowhere when he'd sort of retired himself. And then he raised, I think that this is another thing about this, this idea that if you got him for 5 years, year one would be absolutely great. Year two would maybe be a little bit less great. Then it doesn't have to work like that. And there's loads of examples of it, not just in football, but in sport, where it doesn't. Players then rouse themselves back to a previous level. It then maybe just takes them longer to recover.
Yeah, and look, you know, he's savvy enough as well. You feel like he's a fella that works on his game in every single aspect. He's savvy enough to know if there was any drop-off, I think, of finding other things to do, other ways to play, other things he can do to keep his numbers up. I think as well, it's worth remembering, of course, that he's bedded in, he understands the culture, and he's part of Liverpool. And anyone you buy in, you know, you have a period of transition. So you can't just say, OK, well, we get rid of Mo Salah and we go and get him, and then he just picks up where Mo Salah left off. That isn't how it works. I also think from every aspect, he is a huge asset to Liverpool. There's a part of the world that absolutely adore, well, we adore Mo Salah, but there's a part of the world that adore Mo Salah, you know, unbelievable. I've seen it myself. I've been to Egypt, went to Qatar as well, and it's unbelievable. They treat him like a god, and then Liverpool run off the back of that. Mo Salah's a god out there. Mm. Now, you lose that if he goes, and you don't necessarily get that off someone else you bring in. I imagine commercially that's really good. And then there's just the effect on teammates. Like, I constantly hear this thing, mainly from people who don't support Liverpool and write for national newspapers, that if he breaks the salary structure that we've currently got, then everyone all of a sudden starts knocking on the door saying, OK, I want that now. I don't think that happens, because I think they know how good he is themselves, and they want to play with him, and it improves their chances of being a successful footballer that Mo Salah is on their team.
On the idea of, you look at this one of two ways, and I think that the positive way is the right way, and some people might think, or you would think, that the three of them are around the same age and we're all in this situation at once. You can therefore make a bit of an argument of, well, could that have been managed a little bit differently so that wasn't happening to Liverpool? But I think Liverpool built these players, built this squad, so it was all peaking together at the same time, and then the way in which the contracts moved, they moved that way. For me, I think, though, there is a little bit of a question for Paul as to whether, sorry, for the club, Paul, as to whether or not they actually want all three to extend. Mm-hmm. That it would make sense. I think they would obviously love Salah to extend, but it would actually make a degree of sense, possibly, that you don't definitely do both of the other two in the context of the fact that you definitely want to do Salah. And that's why I like the idea of the dynamics around all of this in and out of Michael Edwards and other officers, Mike Gordon's officers, must be really interesting, because there's probably a little part of Liverpool that until I've thought all the way through they'll do Salah last, and they've done five or six, and then they're going to do Salah. But I do wonder whether or not it sort of suits Liverpool at the minute to maybe be a little bit cute with Mane and Firmino and be able to go, well, we're going to have to see until we get Mo done. You might be banging on the door, and you might want this increase or that increase, but it's not going to be as straightforward as that. And I wonder, there's a lot of game theory in play here in these negotiations that I think is a little different.
Yeah, and I'm glad it is a question for the club and not really for me. Because it's really like, because even as we have this conversation, I'll put the other end of the argument to it as well. And let me say up front, I'm as a fan, I'm like everybody else. We all do this. Sign Mo Salah at any cost. Like, we love him. All the stuff Robbo's just said, couldn't agree more. But all the stuff you've just said is actually what goes on at the club. And we've just seen an example of this. Like, 6 months ago, we're all saying, sign Gini Wijnaldum, give him whatever he wants. And the club decided to let him go. They just decided to let him go. And imagine that conversation around the table. Even, and you could see in the manager's voice, in the way he was talking about Gini Wijnaldum, he loves Gini Wijnaldum. Not loved, loves. If he could have Gini Wijnaldum in his squad, he would have Gini Wijnaldum in his squad. If there was, you know, if there was a magic wand, then you could just have whatever you want. And we still let him go because I think the comparison here is Henderson and Wijnaldum side by side. You can't have both. The club says.
And Thiago,
yeah. And even I forget about that, even though I bang on about him all the time as the replacement. These lads, you can't have all of them. And I think that will be the same case. I just wonder whether, and it's almost, you can't say this out loud in case I'll get people saying to me, you're jinxing it, you're manifesting it, whatever. There's a conversation that actually he's the most saleable asset. out of all of them. The drop-off of the other two means, look at what the other lads we've just talked about. At some point, we want to replace these lads. We want to create a front three as good as they were. Now, we've got Jota. That's done. That's already, I think we're all happy with him. He'll only get better, hopefully. You know, fingers crossed and touch wood and no injuries and all the rest of it. But the reality is, like, I talk about an Mbappe and I talk about a Haaland, and with the model of the club we have, and this is a model I still defend, like the number of people again this summer who were screaming about getting them out and all the rest of it, and like, it's the same model that won us the European Cup and won us the league for the first time in 30 years. So for people who criticise it, yeah, you know, go out and get a Saudi owner, maybe that's what everybody wants and maybe that's better. I actually prefer the way we've done it anyway. I prefer the way we've done it. I prefer the building it up. I prefer the journey and the adventure. And we didn't just buy it and people can't go to us. Yeah, well, imagine what everyone will say to Newcastle fans if they win the league in 5 years. Well, of course you won the league. You had the richest club owners on the planet funding it. Is that, and they might say, I couldn't care less. I'm fair play to them. We'd have said the same if that how we did it. But the way we did it was better. The problem with doing it that way is you have much, much more difficult decisions to make. And I do think I'm with you. I do think there must be an element, because I'm sort of with Robbo and not with Robbo on the people knocking on the door. Because I think the way we do it is we go Mo Salah and everybody else. And something we talk about on the review often is it's not Mo Salah and everyone else. It's Mo Salah and 25 individuals.
Yeah.
Now, Mo Salah might get, you know, the ridiculous contract that he might want and we all think he should have. And Bobby Firmino might be absolutely fine with that. Firmino might say, of course, it's Mo Salah. He's one of the greatest players on the planet. He should get paid well more than the rest of us. And Sadio Mane might say, are you messing? And Virgil van Dijk might say, are you messing? You got me to sign this contract and then you're giving him $100,000 a week more than me. No chance. We're renegotiating mine now. Because I'm the man as well, remember? Remember, how did we win the league? How did we win the Champions League? Everyone's banging on about Virgil van Dijk, aren't they? And then what about Alisson? Alisson says, I'm gone. Aren't I the big keeper? When I'm not here, you're all crying. You've got other players you can step in for Mo, but when I'm not here, you're all crying. So it doesn't take...
And also those people, those footballers may feel like whatever they feel like themselves, but they've also got representatives who are paid good money to look after their interests.
Exactly. And look, to bring it into the real world as well, someone said this to me ages ago in my old business life. He said, it's not even the person you're negotiating with who's the problem most of the time. Everyone goes home. Yep. And they speak to their partners and they speak to their families and they speak to their mates. And all it takes is a few people to go, you're being had off. You're being treated like a mug there. And all of a sudden you start thinking, am I? Because I was happy with it. But now loads of people are telling me I'm being treated like a mug. Am I being treated like a mug? And that can be like a virus within your squad. Maybe not the best word to use right now, but you know, like woodworm spreading through your squad without you knowing it.
But the agents of every one of those players just listed, when they went to negotiations, the first words they'd have said was, what are you doing about Mo Salah?
Yeah.
Because if they didn't, they're not worth the salt and they shouldn't be doing the job. So those conversations will have been had. You know, if there is going to be a degree of Salah exceptionalism, then the people who've already people who've already signed their contracts will have known about it and will be aware of it. I think there's an easy way forward with this. Salah, we're currently at a stage, I know the media are claiming Salah doesn't get enough love in Liverpool, whereas we're currently at a stage going...
absolutely mad. It was mad.
It's
was
incredible,
mad.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's if it bothers...
Do we all have to knock around to his house on a daily basis? Eventually we piss his missus off. I'm sure of it.
I mean, I'm for it. If that's what
we've all got to do.
I'd be much more enraged reading the Arsenal and the Telegraph if I'd have been prepared to pay to read the Arsenal and the Telegraph. So I haven't read it, so I'll just go from the headlines. No, you're talking nonsense. We're currently having a conversation about, is he actually the best footballer that's ever played for us? And, you know, for my generation, having seen Dalglish his entire career with us, seen him play in the flesh and still maintaining he's the best footballer I've ever seen, I'm asking, is Mo Salah best than Kenny? I've gone my head to Gerrard now. Is he best than Kenny? Is he? I've said for about 3 years, he's given me more joy than Suarez. And the key to it is, Salah can keep himself fit in a way that Cristiano Ronaldo has. So we're looking at, not wanting to pick up Ronaldo too much, but Ronaldo is kind of, Ronaldo, if it wasn't for Messi, Ronaldo would be the greatest player in the world. It wouldn't even be a question. And that's because the dedication he's put into his craft to actually keeping himself physically perfect. Salah's doing exactly the same thing. And if there were, there is not a single player in world football you could bring into our team and put in place of Mo Salah would make us better than we already are. You could put Haaland in place of Bobby, we'd score more goals. You could put Mbappe in place of Sadio, and he would possibly be more effective on the left. There is nobody you can replace Mo Salah with. So if he comes out with a net nil value in 5 years, who's arsed?
On that though, Gareth, the flip side is, and this is and it's important, I think, to put this side, I think Mo Salah will win the... I think if Liverpool win either major trophy this year, I think Mo Salah will, and certainly if it's the European Cup, will probably win the Ballon d'Or. I think he can win two or three Ballon d'Ors, but I think he only wins two or three Ballon d'Ors if he continues to play for Liverpool, because this is a team that's been built and built around him and set up for him, yeah, and set up to get the best out of him. If he suddenly goes to Paris Saint-Germain or goes somewhere else, goes, you can do the Newcastle thing, but the idea that they're playing Champions League football anytime soon is you know, ridiculous. They could still get relegated this year. Yeah. So you've got to allow for, you know, that's not a stage he should be taking his talents to under any circumstances. And I think anywhere else he goes, it will not be built for him. And I'm sure Liverpool are saying, you want to win that Ballon d'Or, you want to be top scorer year in, year out, you want to win major honours, the best place, the place you're most likely to do it, is this place.
And there's nothing to say that he doesn't think that himself.
I think he does. I agree with you, yeah.
Because, you know, for all this constant chatter, and we're part of it, by the way, of course, about his contract, he's a happy player. You know, he's playing with a smile on his face. He's literally putting it out there on his own social media how much he enjoys the fans. And then, so that makes it even more bizarre that people are choosing to write a piece saying the fans don't respect him, when he's literally saying, I know you do, and you don't know how much it lifts me that you do. And he's turning in these performances week after week. He loves it. He seems to love his teammates love him. He's not spoiling for some kind of move. And also as well, you know, The other angle on it is that there doesn't, you're quite right to say, like, everything is set up for him at Liverpool. He knows the system, he knows the manager, presumably he's settled, because we don't get a vibe of anything else. But also there's not a lot of stuff going on elsewhere where you think, well, that's a good move for him right now, or that's a good move for him right now. Like, PSG's mad. Like, it's not the best league in the world by any stretch. They've already got a load of stars. It's turning a bit Galactico, a bit sort of Globem Hall, you know that type of thing. Like, do you really want to go there and sort of not be the star, because you're the absolute star here? It's like what we said about what Klopp said about Coutinho when he left. Like, if Mo sticks around, he's already top 10 in the goal scorers for Liverpool. He can overtake Michael Owen. He can get sort of top maybe 6, 7, whatever. He will go down as one of the greatest players in Liverpool's history. And who knows, he might have a statue himself. He might have a stand, a lounge, whatever it may be.
Think a lounge is a selling point.
I was just going to say, yeah. I love that idea of, like, them saying, you could have
well, I'm just thinking,
you can have a lounge.
I'm just thinking there's not that many stands, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, we're running out of stands here to name after people.
I'm with you. I think we should say it to him just to see.
Yeah.
And we'll film it.
Well, we'll just say that. We know you're not into your aisle, so we'll jib the Carlsberg Lounge, we'll call it the Mo Salah Lounge. Yeah, how about that? But no, he's... Look, he's on course to be, already is one of the best in Liverpool's history, on course to be even greater. And look, that's got to count for something, hasn't it? And
yeah,
I don't know. You know, Real Madrid, Barcelona look pretty basket case right now. PSG, we already mentioned them. And then Newcastle, come on. Why would you go there?
Like, ridiculous.
You go there, okay, they can probably offer him a draft wage, but I don't feel like his only motivation in life is money, surely. Like, I mean, I haven't Googled it to see what Mo's earned so far in his career, but it's going to be more than Divock. You know, he's all right. Liverpool set up for him. He's set up for Liverpool. Get the contact done, keep him here, and let's keep on making him great.
Just dead quick from each of the three of you, around all three of the players, what do you actually think happens, approximate sort of timeline, Gareth?
I think Mo does sign, and I think that's probably the first one we see. And then I'm going to stick with the idea that the other two, they hang fire and they sort of leave it hanging a little bit, almost as a motivatory factor, like, you know, let's see your best again and then we'll talk.
Mo signs a long-term deal very, very soon, and the others, I think you're looking at possibly short-term extensions.
Yeah, and maybe it's heart overhead saying, I do think Mo will extend, and just on a brief point, I think the sort of Leeds Milner thing on a completely different level. The fact that Barcelona and Real Madrid are basket cases now really helps us, because that's the natural other whether you think it's a step up or not, it's the other place to go where you can do the stuff you're talking about. And everyone's looking at those places now going,
5-year rebuild.
It's a bit mad that, yeah. Like someone told me the other week that the crowds are just ridiculously low, which even that, you'd be like, really? I don't want to go and play there. It looks miserable.
Well, Barca were linked with Divock.
Really? I mean, that says it all. That's what we should be saying to Mo, by the way. Forget the Lounge thing. They're sniffing around Divock like, oh, right, I'm definitely not going there then. So, yeah, I think we do that. The other two, I could see both going, because I could see, going back into this talk before, Mane being the one being like, oh, I'm not happy if he's getting paid loads more than me. And if that's the case, I think that's okay.
I think Salah will get done at some point soon. I think Mane will be hot on the heels, or Mo are hot on the heels of Mane, either way. And I think they'll do a bit of a watching brief with Firmino. I think it wouldn't surprise me if Firmino goes into his final year, but there's still talk that Liverpool might come to an agreement with him a little bit. I can see a world where Mane manages to get himself a pay increase. I can't quite see Firmino manages to get himself a pay increase. So at which point then do you sign an agreement to take a pay cut? I know it wouldn't work like that, but you know, you sort of get me drift. The other thing I can also see happening is I can really see a home for Firmino at Paris Saint-Germain in a way I can't for the others, in that Paris Saint-Germain are really going to need a footballer who makes sense of the rest of it at some point soon, yeah. And Firmino would do that for them. All right then, we were going to talk about Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita, but they'll be all right. So if you want to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, prior to a massive run of games, away at Watford, away at Atletico, away at Manchester United, they're the three that we come back to. It's theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. Alternatively, download the app. You get tokens there if you want to check out all of our premium stuff, being lots of excellent bits and pieces on video and audio across the last week or so during the international break. But obviously, we're all gearing back up for what's a massive run of games for the Reds. Also, on Wednesday night, Liverpool women at Prenton Park play against Aston Villa. If you get my email, there will be a code in there so that you can get free entry. It is 7 p.m. on Wednesday, early-ish kickoff for an evening game. Do get down to Prenton Park. Aston Villa are in the division above Liverpool, but Liverpool played really well against Sheffield United on Sunday. Really impressive they were at Bramall Lane, and it's a good chance to see how far off the WSL teams they are when Aston Villa come on Wednesday evening. So 7 p.m. Prenton Park for that. And as I say, if you read the emails that I send, and be one either today or tomorrow, depending on how my time goes, in there will be a code for that women's game. Want to talk about the Newcastle takeover and where it impacts Liverpool and where it impacts the league as a whole. The first thing I want to do though, Gareth, is there's the obvious issues around the 80% stake in this by the public investment fund of the sovereign absolutist monarchy that is Saudi Arabia, with all of its policies, with all of its outlooks, with its ultimately, in lots of senses, bigoted stances on a number of things. Without specifically getting into Saudi Arabia, what I found broadly depressing in lots of ways was the response of some Newcastle supporters. I understood the excitement of getting Ashley out. What comes in, it is valid for it to be a question. The whataboutery I didn't like. But what I actually found more depressing was how few questions there were for the Premier League in comparison for how many questions there were for Newcastle supporters who just have season tickets and want to watch football.
Yeah, that's it. And that was kind of where I went with it on social media and engaged in a few debates around it, because for me, you know, we can see the background of the Saudis. We've heard the stories. We know about the journalists. We know about their stances around women, about gay people, and etc. And they don't chime with any of our values. The values supposedly of this league that is pushed, you know, rainbow laces and this, that, and the other, and blah blah blah. And then they're letting the takeover like this go through. You know, there's your big hypocrisy for me. And to aim it at fans, I just found a little bit grim. I mean, I'm looking at some pieces that have been written the last couple of days. I'm still seeing one saying, well, you know, it's up to fans. How do they react now and all this kind of stuff? Like, that's so blanket, that. Because there are people who support every football club in this country who football is essentially their lives. It's like the light in a fairly grim life. There are working class people that support football, save up all their money and go to a football match. And the idea that you say to them, well, you know what's going on in Saudi,
You should walk away from your football club now. You should forget about that. You know, that light in your week, forget about that, because this has happened and it had nothing to do with you and you didn't make it happen. It was the Premier League. But yeah, walk away now. Like, that's just not realistic and not fair. And also, you know, there's plenty of people struggling to literally feed themselves and feed their families. And the idea that they're up to speed with what's going on in Saudi Arabia, again, not realistic. Like, I think you've got to think about sort of, people are from different backgrounds, different classes. People have a different amount of time to engage with news, foreign news, international news, and what's going on in other countries. And you can call that ignorance if you want. But what I'm saying is, everyone isn't in the same place. Everyone is not up to speed with everything about this regime, this fund, and how this takeover has happened. And you look at like what Newcastle have put out, like their own comms around it, if you like, and it's all about ambition, and it's all about here we go, and it's all, so no wonder you've got fellas dancing in the streets, do you know what I mean? Because they've had 14 years of this fella who was not aligned with their values in any way, and he was taking the piss, and he was putting Sport Direct all over their home, and, you know, not giving a new contract to Rafa, who they loved, and, you know, bringing in all these people who should never have been anywhere near the club, not investing in the training ground, not investing in the team, the ground, anything, and just absolute disdain for everything about Newcastle, the club and the supporters. Now, these are obviously going to come in, and they're not daft. You know, they've got people around them, whatever you want to say about them, they've got people around them who are going to say the right things comms-wise, put the right messages across. And so, therefore, a lot of fans are going to swallow that and go, this is great, this sounds boss, oh my God, we're the richest club in the world, all of that kind of thing. And that's literally what sports washing is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why, you know,
that's why there should be protections and regulations, yeah, around it.
And the things that are grim about it, and they are grim, don't get me wrong. And of course, I'd like to think if it was Liverpool, you know, we'd all be out on the streets. But it's ultimately down to the Premier League. It ultimately falls at their door with their crappy fit and proper persons test that allows people like this to come in and take over our football clubs. It's down to them. If you've got beef with it, you should be at the Premier League's door. You should be sending letters and emails to them. You should be out on the streets outside there saying, how did you let this happen? It shouldn't come back to the doors of ordinary Newcastle fans with us all pointing fingers at them saying, hang on, what? You're celebrating the fact that your team might finally win something. How dare you?
I'll be very critical of it and then reverse a tiny bit. There's a terrible statement from the Newcastle United LGBT community. It's a really, really bad statement under the circumstances. My point about it, Paul, is they haven't had the training. They don't know this is going to happen to them. This is literally how you need to be protected from this sort of thing. There's suddenly an LGBT community that's knocking around. There's a lot of places have. Liverpool's one is absolutely excellent, and we should be proud of it. In the same way that we should be proud, I think, of a lot of the bits that exist around Liverpool, sort of, you know, fan engagements. For instance, Spirit of Shankly is an unbelievably mature organisation now. The cop-outs that we've got, you know, they're really, really good. This Newcastle United, as I say, statement, I don't think it would have been put out by anyone connected to Liverpool for a variety of reasons, but not least a greater sense of maturity, more people to consult with, been doing it for longer in lots of ways. But my point isn't to just criticise the statements. My point is to say it's because of the Premier League they have to issue one. And that's where this is where the protections need to come in. They need to come in at the very highest level. And if that's governmental, that's absolutely fine. What I would say is that since there was movement around the Crouch Report, the government has supposedly had meetings with the Premier League around this Saudi Arabia thing as well. There was pressure put on from the Saudi Arabians toward Boris Johnson. And also, since the Crouch Report came in, the Premier League have been allowed just to roll the TV deals over by 5 years as well. It's almost as though the whole thing might be a bit of a sham. But the interim report was good. It's an elongated question, Paul, to say football supporters and football clubs need to be protected. They shouldn't have to constantly protect themselves and stand up for themselves. People should stand up for them.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I've not seen that statement, so I don't know what it says. But I think the problem ultimately, whenever any topic like this comes up, it doesn't, without getting too much into my other world that I'm in, it doesn't surprise me one bit. And the thing that does surprise me a little bit more than anything else is how people are shocked by the hypocrisy of it all, and how much the hypocrisy there is. Like, I always talk about things, people, we love talking in life about things in black and white terms. And I always say to people, you need to get away from that and come towards thinking everything on a scale. And the problem is with the scale, and it's funny watching, like, we might get onto this, like, the reaction of other clubs, and I've only seen bits and bobs of this, but It's like, you know, any like Man City are happy as long as they're the richest club and their owners are sound. And then someone else comes in and they go, well, we're not having this. This is a disgrace. And you're like, lads, it's just you. It's just you with more money in a different time. Like, if you go into any ownership of any football club at the highest level, where do you want to draw the line? This is always the big question for me. Because you can go, yeah, okay, we're all comfortable. Saudi ownership is beyond, like, their principles, everything they believe in, beyond what we all think is right. Okay, well, let's keep coming backwards then. We're having a World Cup in Qatar in a year. Is that all right? Like, are we all right with that? We've been having, and for, you know, go outside football, we've been having world title boxing fights in Saudi.
Yeah.
Is that all right? Well, it needs a bigger conversation than football.
We're selling arms to Saudi, is that all right?
Well, this is it. Like, this is ultimately where I come back to it. This is, there's always loads of focus on footy. And yeah. Footy just plugs into a wider world, which for me is just built up to be absolutely crap, to put it in very simple terms. Because whether people like this or not, we've decided to build a world over a number of generations now that's built around money. And that's it. So we can say the Premier League should protect football fans. And you go, really? What's the Premier League's actual incentive? Like, what are they in it for? And the Premier League might say, it's not up to us, it's up to the government. And then you go, okay, it's up to the government to protect football fans. And you go, really? What's the government in it for?
Like, these lads especially.
These lads especially, do you know what I mean? More than any other time. You've got, we can go well off topic here, but, you know, in the real world, outside of, I'm with Rob on what sport represents to all of us and people, but in, like, literally this government spending hundreds of millions of pounds of our money, taxpayers' money, just giving it to their mates, basically, under the cover of other things. And in the same breath, we're going, that government and organisations under their purview should be looking after us in a footy sense. Imagine having an honest conversation with them where they could be completely honest. They'd go to you, come on, fellas. Like, we're not even looking after your best interests in normal life. We couldn't give we couldn't care less about football. We'll do all of that singing and dancing and all that, but at the end of the day, if one of the richest, bear this in mind, one of the richest families on the entire planet comes to us and says, we want to buy a football club in your country, I guarantee you one thing, that is going to end up happening one way or another. And it doesn't matter. And everyone, I'm with Rob on the fact that I feel sorry for Newcastle fans, actually, because we might say, oh, if it was us, we'd be out on the streets complaining. Would we? If it was, like, look at now, people want, there are still some people, crazily in my eyes, who want our owners out. Well, who do they want? Wouldn't some of those people happily have taken one of the wealthiest families on the planet?
Some of course those people they would. Have said
they were demanding it the other day. Exactly. That was the thing that really annoyed me, going online and going, well, these people, the FSG out lads, are demanding that we should have sold to these. It's kind of like, well, that's not our principles. We wouldn't want to be owned by this nation state. But
some would.
But some would. But if you drill down to your principles, we're all hypocrites at some points. You know, I believe we're a socialist club based on socialist foundations. Have any of our owners ever been socialists? Isn't John
they
Henry?
They can't be.
They can't be. You don't get to be a billionaire by being a socialist. Isn't John Henry linked to the Trump family in some way?
No.
I'm wrong on that one. I'm being told strongly no. So I'll pull that bone back right immediately. That was my assumption and from something I'd read and isn't put out there as fact. So, but do they tally with my political beliefs? They probably don't, but I still support the club.
We've just been talking about paying a footballer hundreds of thousands of pounds a week. Hundreds of thousands of pounds a week.
With 17 million is
a cheap one. That doesn't tie in with our... Look, at the same time, we talk about supporting food banks. Imagine, we're all hip, as you say, and I'm...
Liverpool are going to sell to Dubai, Liverpool are going to sell to Shinawatra, you know, and, like, I can remember people at the time of those deals saying, well, if it gets us a new stadium or if it gets us investment in the team, you know, the same stuff, basically. Because ultimately, like, when you dangle this big thing, when you've had a grim time following your football club and this big thing's dangled there, a lot of people will go and jump at that and grab that and ignore the rest. Well,
I think, is the important detail here, and this is where I have got to, it's the Ashliness of it. I want to pull back to the bit for us, Ian. Playing the politics of the situation, I actually think, at least in the short term, this is no bad thing around Liverpool, because what it wouldn't surprise me to see is clubs like Chelsea, like Manchester City, maybe taking another view now around financial fair play and curbs on spending. That there's now a sudden moment where there could be a little bit of self-interest for 19 Premier League clubs around the rules. Suddenly the rules look like they could be useful for almost everybody. And,
did you see the pie chart, the wealth?
Yeah.
That was my favourite thing. I love representing things to people in very, very simple terms. And that pie chart just made me laugh so much, because someone at Man City is looking at that going, that doesn't look good for us, lads.
And I think that is a massive thing here. And we know that the rules can be bent towards breaking points, but everyone's got the Man City and PSG examples now. We think FFP is not a thing, but clubs do broadly adhere to it. Everton this summer were an example of a side who, in Premier League terms, were told that they had to rein it in. I think there's obviously a lot of deep accountancy around this, but I also suspect the big European clubs won't be happy either. I'm sure Bayern Munich weren't delighted by this turn of events. I think that you might actually see some rules tightening, at least in the short term. Will there be attempts to abuse those rules? I suspect there may well be. But I think in the short term, you might actually see a little bit of, all right, let's just all take a breath.
I'm a lot less optimistic about that than you are. My personal feeling is Everton, and this is once again utterly my personal feeling, Everton adhere to it because they can't afford the same lawyers that Man City can. Because we know the City said that they would just tie everybody up in red tape, or allegedly said that. I think City have broken FFP. They've proved it doesn't matter, it doesn't exist. And I think if I were Newcastle's owners, I'd be going, well, we'll have an Mbappe, we'll have a Haaland. Who can we get as the best goalie? How much can we get away with spending?
I think that it does exist. Like, Paris Saint-Germain went out of the way to say, we've done everything we've done and we're still compliant in a European
and
sense.
And Barca have obviously been hit with it.
Well, it obviously exists on a domestic level in Spain, because it's absolutely nailed Barcelona and a couple of other sides, Valencia being another example. So it obviously exists on a domestic level in Spain. There's obviously rules and curbs that are adhered to in Germany. Paris Saint-Germain went out of the way to say we are able to be compliant. I think, trust me, it's a public relations exercise, and it's all a lot of complicated accountancy, and they'll be pushing the complicated accountancy. But I think it does exist. But my point is more, it's now in Manchester City's interests a little bit more than it was for it to exist and for it to be adhered to and for them to help write the rule book, because they'll want the rule book to constrain other people.
Yeah, because suddenly they're going to become the second most expensive team in the world rather than the first, and they'll be the second richest team in the world rather than the first, and they've just changed the game again, and we've watched the last few years where everybody's just changing the game. But I'm cynical on these things. I'm very cynical.
Long term, I'm cynical. Short term, I'm not.
I'm with you, sorry. Only because, I mean, just look at Man City as the example. Man City couldn't... And this isn't just a financial thing, what Ian's just said. In a fantasy football world, the Saudi Arabian royal family come in and say, we'll have Mbappe, Haaland, blah, blah, blah. Go and try and get Haaland to sign for Newcastle and see what he says.
Yeah.
Now. Try and get him now. Man City weren't buying the best players in the world got their first owner. They went and found what lad they could that was a high-profile name that would sign for them, and they got Rabinho. And it was like, oh, great. And then over years... They did two things. Well, they changed ownership during that time anyway, and this is a far more savvy ownership. I don't think the Everton thing is as much a case of they can't afford it as they're not, that ownership isn't as savvy. I've had glimpses behind, like speaking to marketing companies and stuff who've dealt directly with like the ownership group in Man City years ago. And they said to me, you should all be afraid, because what you're seeing in public is nothing compared to how well-structured they are behind the scenes. Like, they have a 50-year plan that is unstoppable. And I just don't think the ownership of Everton is as savvy as that. And that's without much to back that up, just other than instincts and bits and bobs we've seen.
Buying David Clarkson.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's a fair bit of evidence to support what I'm saying. But the thing about City was, over a period of time, the stuff we've seen to fiddle FFP, and that's why I'm with you, I'm confident short-term but not long-term, the stuff we've seen that they can bend FFP, and PSG can do a similar thing, takes years to build up. Because you've got to start putting in place the accountancy practices, you've got to start putting in place the deals and the sponsorship, you've got to be able to at least... This is, look at the Saudi takeover. We live in a world where basically it's not about what's right and wrong. It's about what you can sort of justify and sort of make a story for.
Pretty much get away with.
Can we get away with this? If we say this, this and this, will that be all right? Can we play it out in the papers? Can we get the PR team on it, like Robbo's saying? This is all what goes on behind the scenes, and that takes time to build up. Literally in a physical sense of, the people who run Newcastle right now, the people in the offices and that, will not be equipped to do what Man City do behind the scenes. They'll need hundreds more people to work for the company, and that takes time to build up. We've seen it with Liverpool.
Sweet shop compared to supermarket currently.
Exactly.
And even when you see pictures of the training ground as it is currently, you're like, is that a Premier League training ground?
Yeah. That's it.
And that's where, for instance, Haaland and Mbappe, they have a look at the training ground. What, you want me to come and work here every single day?
No,
just last little thing on it, Gareth, for me, is the general vulnerability of the situation. I mean, first and foremost, one of these takeovers can't work immediately, and also this lot could still go down. They could literally go down this season. Even if they invest in January, they might buy the wrong player, it might not gel, there might be an injury. Someone's going to go down, I think, this season because of Brentford's start, although I do still think Brentford might taper off as the muck and bullets build up. That, put that to one side. European football remains in massive flux. So the idea of trying to think long term, no one quite knows what happens next. I still don't think the Super League's entirely gone away or the stuff around it. And something like this, again, makes that more vulnerable off the basis of the idea that if you can get better, tighter financial controls all in one place, that might appeal to people as well.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, this is just another example that football's fucking mad. And, you know, I think for... maybe I'm sort of generalising a little bit, but it you know, for me then, I'll just do me and not say for people my age or whatever I was going to say, but you know, it is slightly depressing, I would say, about...
I couldn't agree more. I found Thursday really hard, like on a personal level, I found it hard.
And it's not just because where Liverpool are in the food chain or any of that stuff, it's just like, I'm not sure how much it feels like a sport at times, and it's like, you know, even like speaking to my own son about it, and you know, he's not as passionate about football currently as I am, but he, you know, takes a passing interest. He's more of a sort of a gamer who likes football than, you know, and his first thing he said that came out of his mouth is that Newcastle are the richest club in the world, and that's what him and his mates are talking about. That's their conversation, and it's like, well, since when's that a thing? You know what I mean? Who's asked? Like, you know, I like watching football players that are really good at football and can take on four players and put it in the top bin and make you go, wow. You know, I'm not that arsed about who's got the most money. Like, it's a boring conversation. Accountancy is boring. Like, dodgy regimes that do what they do to people like that. Why have they come to this country and been allowed to take over a football club? Like, I don't know. I just live in some, like, mad world where I'd quite like it to be romantic. Maybe it never was. Maybe I just, you know, maybe once upon a time I had the blinkers on and now I've taken them off and I've had a dark night of the soul about football, but it just, you know, it does drag me down, stuff like this. I just think, how is that allowed to happen? How are we here? But we are.
Thank you very much, Andy Heaton, for producing. Paul Cope, Ian Salmon, and Gareth Roberts. Just to sort of sum up a bit of what Gareth says there, it's the Anfield Wrap, and who sleeps these days?
Sports Social Podcast Network.